Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. This week, I sit down with Nandeep Singh, who's running for Fresno City Council in District 1. If you don't know Deep, he's a Central Unified School District Board trustee, a co-founder of the Jacaro Movement, and teaches history at UC Santa Cruz. Which is to say, he's not the typical career politician. We get into the weeds on a lot of stuff. The patchwork of city and county jurisdictions that's left West Fresno without sidewalks for 30 plus years. What to actually do about parking in Tower without bulldozing what makes the neighborhood the neighborhood. Vacant buildings, adaptive reuse, and where Annalisa Perea has been a leader. The SATA fight, smart growth, and why he thinks Dyer has been overspending. The utility rate hikes hitting people that are already stretched thin. The police budget, mental health services, and whether the city should be a partner to community events like Porch Fest or just stay out of the way. We get into all the usual stuff as well, where Deep likes to eat around town, his alchemist order, a round of overrated versus underrated. This was a fun and wonky conversation, and I know you'll love it. Let's go meet Deep Singh. Infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best! Deep, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Oh, man. So, Jordan, this question goes into different directions because, honestly, it's about food context and how much we want to spend.
Yeah. Let's do a lunch and dinner. What's your preferred lunch and dinner spots?
All right. I tend to like Asian food because of just a spice. Really feeling right now, Sandy's Chili. That's like a gas station off Ashland.
What's a Sandy's Chili?
They have a Lao sandwich that's really good there. A little bit different than a Vietnamese banh mi.
Hold on, where is this place?
Ashland and right around Cedar.
Okay.
It's at 76th.
Okay.
And it's just on the side. Mama's Asian over by the airport is great. If I have to be more D1 centric, then...
You're walking down Olive. Where are you going to stop and grab something to eat? I know that's kind of, let's just say for today, rather.
If I'm with Carla from Fresno City, we're definitely stopping at Irene's. That'll be the go-to. If we can get in the car a little bit, we'll go to Mike's, the pizzeria, a little kind of more famous. And if we're west of 99, we got a number of sushi places that have really come up in the Ashland and Blythe area. And as everyone always asks me for Indian places, I would say the restaurants are great, but try Shanae Punjab or India Sweets and Spices all around the Sean Marks area in the Food Max parking lot. You'll be surprised what you find at the Indian grocer.
I love there's this writer that did a dining guide for strip malls. And honestly, some of the best food is just hidden in there. But it can be so hard to find it. I don't know if we just need better advertising or we need someone that's almost like an anthropologist, goes around to different strip malls or ethnography or whatever, like breaks down the strip mall. Because there's one I've talked about before on Shaw and like West.
Okay.
It has teriyaki. It's got a great Thai place. And it almost has this kind of, it's like this Asian corridor of good food, but you wouldn't know that unless you drove around in there.
I think the B in terms of Bethany's work, I remember Melissa did one or Montalvo did an article around like the different pho spots. I know like Fresnoland is doing their sort of FAT city. So I think there's the journalistic sort of beats are looking towards that, but I just think to have more just kind of community guides, people blogging again, maybe, or whatever the case may be. To help find some great spots, not just what Yelp is pushing on.
I know. And when I ask people for their food recommendations on this podcast, I do tend to get similar ones each time. And I think we find something that we like and we just think it's a desert out there and we're not going to find something else.
No.
We should get a little more creative because there's a lot. We have so many restaurants per capita in the city. It's kind of bonkers.
For sure. And I think it's just, and it's always evolving because what used to be my favorite may no longer be in a place that I honestly didn't like the first time. I might have taken a little while, but I tried it a second or third and I was all like, oh man, I just didn't get the right dish.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is like that turn off on that first order. You just don't know. And that's why it's always good to ask the people when you're in those places.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into politics. I've got a bunch of kind of wonky, let's get in the weeds questions, but I wanted to just start with a general question. What's it like to run for city council in a city like Fresno? Like from your experience, like experientially.
So very weird in the sense because A, I haven't done it. B, I never dreamed I'd do it. And C, here we go plodding along. I think The best part of it is talking to community. Like I have, because of my appearance, I've always had to be some sort of ambassador because people like, I've seen Punjabi people, but I've never had a conversation. Or so there's in the Punjabi community, especially in Fresno, it's so highly densely concentrated in a few areas of town. Mm-hmm. So especially in central Fresno, that becomes like a reoccurring conversation. I never mind it because I'm just like, hey, like it's just a chance to sometimes break bread, but at the minimum, just have a conversation of like neighbors getting to know neighbors.
Yeah, we are very pocketed. And I had a similar conversation with Manpreet Kaur, councilwoman in Bakersfield. And she was also describing this kind of, and I think that's just like right south of the city of Bakersfield. There's that
in the southwest
really,
area.
Yeah, really yep, intense
right off
pocket.
Panama. Yeah. I know it well. I know Manpreet very well. And I think there's that aspect of it. I think the part that is least interesting is the politicos and how much like they like
the
machinations and just how high school-y it ends up like feeling.
Do you run into the same people at kind of every event type thing where you're feeling like, oh, it's the same crew of politically involved or?
So those are the people I don't mind because those are the people that you engage with. Those are the honest times you're taking fights either with or sometimes even against. But you develop a camaraderie, some sort of like kinship and connection to some of the folks that are saying like, we want to move this city. So yes, you are going to be dealing oftentimes with the same city. How do you do that in a big tent? Manner
yep.
to allow more people and to lower the barrier of entry. So because most of my friends, like the first thing will be like, I'm not into politics. I'm like, you don't need to be, but are you into sidewalks? Yeah, I hate the one outside my street. Okay, then that is going to be a political
engagement.
What's
the phrase? You don't care about politics, but politics cares about you. Let's talk about city council as a structure to start, because I think it's kind of interesting because people just take for granted whatever exists in their space. And so we have a district voting structure versus an at-large. So there are some cities where you've got a slate of candidates and then the top five or how many are running for election will get a slot. Whereas we have a district voting system, which I think there are pluses and minuses. With the district voting system, lower socioeconomic regions within a city get equal representation to, so Southwest Fresno is going to get the same representation as North Fresno, gerrymandering aside.
Right? Absolutely.
And so there are some benefits. There are some costs too, which is the costs are a little more complicated to explain, but essentially it can favor incumbents, first of all, because you know the people in your hood versus an at-large slate where you can just kind of pick through, and it can lead to worse outcomes because the people in their district feel like they're only representing their district. And so they dig their heels in on specific district level issues and are not as focused on the city itself. So I'd be curious to respond to like how you think about the pluses and minuses of our system, and do you agree with the critiques of it?
So my first engagement in a deeper way with this, Jordan, comes from my experience in Central Unified School District. So prior to, I want to say the 2010, and this was prior to Mike coming onto the board, MALDEF, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education Fund, I believe, they had come and they had seen the trustee makeup in Central Unified, which was an at-large voting system, very similar to Clovis Unified until very recently.
Yeah.
And I think threatened to sue. And so then the school district itself then moved very quickly to trustee areas. To your...
Okay, so you got a direct contrast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What was the difference?
I wasn't as engaged during that time. So I can't tell you the direct contrast, but what I can share is at least since I joined the board in 2018, I can see there's a high favoritism towards incumbents. But the third thing that I think it lends, so I actually have not had any experience, and even my experience in city council outside maybe District 2 and District 6, I have not seen people really get entrenched in what's best for their particular neighborhoods. That hasn't been my experience. It doesn't occur.
Yeah.
But I feel like it doesn't occur on the south side. Maybe it does occur. I've seen it occur on the north
side. Yeah, there's definitely some people in certain regions of town that care about their specific issues. An example would be a city councilman who will go nameless trying to keep a multifamily housing development out of his neighborhood, which that would benefit the whole city in terms of our housing supply.
Absolutely.
But people that are thinking about their home equity in that particular neighborhood. So he's making decisions for that specific community, not thinking about the city itself.
And that's where I have seen it more. I have not seen it necessarily on the south side.
Yeah.
The third element I just want to bring up is where I've seen this lens itself is parachuters, carpetbaggers, if you want to use an older terminology, where you have people that will move specifically to areas that they know tend to be lower socioeconomic, not high voter engaged, maybe communities even in transition.
Yeah.
And they'll be able to bring bigger money than maybe a local, more regionalized candidate. So that has actually been the experience that I've seen most often.
Let's talk about another aspect of this campaign, which I see in multiple races. You have career politicians and more ground up community organizers. I think the big one that is a big contrast right now is Sandra Celadon and Lisa Perea. And focusing on the community organizer critique, because we can talk about career politicians all day. They're kind of fish in a barrel.
Sure.
So one of the critiques I've heard with community organizers running for office is it can be hard to govern the people you used to organize against. Do you think that critique holds water?
I think it possibly depends on the individual, because I haven't seen enough of it in Fresno to really tell you local examples. I can tell you in Karen Bass, definitely came from that in terms of the city of Los Angeles. Yeah. And there's many others as well. My always guiding light in terms of where you have potentially different constituencies who you have worked with and now who you are serving. And in Central Unified, I absolutely share when people come, some people I'm very close with, to come yell and voice their opinion, for instance, in public comment, that I inherit the harms that this institution has done to others far before myself and possibly even after myself. And so this is the burden, but more importantly, this is the responsibility of an elected, is that you do carry those burdens. You do carry that harm, the responsibility. Your job is to try to fix it. You individually may not have been responsible, but you are now part of a system and you have an opportunity to change it. So for me, I encourage people. I encourage my friends, colleagues, or whoever the case may be. And to be honest, if you know the relationships deepest, those are the people that are going to criticize you loudest. They may give you some grace at times in terms of an individual, because you may say, hey, I may not have a majority coalition at this particular moment, or I need your help swaying a few other folks to bring this about. But I haven't seen that particular type of struggle in terms of, are you, because a lot of the same skills in terms of coalition building, listening, and honestly, compassion and care are just something you can't teach.
Yeah, and that's what Sandra said when I pushed her on the similar subjects. She said, because I was suggesting to her in no small way that, like, you fought a lot of fights and pissed a lot of people off, which is, you know, good for you. Have high integrity, have principles.
But is it going to be, has benefit of the city.
Yeah. And, but is that going to make it hard for you to do the horse trading that oftentimes legislation looks like in a place where you have to compromise, you have to bend on some of your principles that maybe you wouldn't have to do as a community organizer in order to get stuff done? Let me ask another question it came from an interview I did with Annalisa Perea when I was still doing the podcast at Fresnoland. We kept asking her questions specifically about her beliefs on issues, and she resorted to this similar refrain of, I am just here to find out what my community believes and then almost like a conduit, funnel it to City Hall. And my pushback was always, some of your constituents are going to disagree with each other. So at the end of the day, eventually you'll have to have some rubric for how to select which approach you're going to take on a particular issue. How do you view, if you're elected to city council, your relationship to your constituents? Do you view it as a conduit, a representative in the sense that, like, you got elected because you have certain values and you're going to carry those values? Sometimes you might piss the community off if you're going to stand hard on a subject that maybe they don't understand or maybe they disagree with. So where are you at in that spectrum?
I think it depends on what specific topic we're talking about. I think I am a...
Sidewalks. Let's go sidewalks. That's where I'm going next.
Sure. So for me, I do believe that sidewalks are like obviously critical issues. That feels like the most like trite, like
statement. No. So we're going to talk about the Highway City Community Development next.
I'm excited about that. And then, but specifically, I think I want to see a participatory budgeting system. Yeah. And that means I am not the expert of all things tower. I am not the expert of, I'm not even the expert of all things in my own community.
That'd be impossible, like, right?
And so, but to hold myself, and I saw Councilmember Esmeralda Soria experiment with this.
Yeah.
I think, what are mechanisms to hold the elected accountable? But I think, yes, we have to have, oh man, I hate using Fresno Unified language, but guideposts and goals in terms of what are our guardrails, I think was the word that you like to use. What are we going to be actually staying within? So things to me, for instance, history matters, context matters, equity matters, justice matters. Does it mean you get it all right all the time and on every sidewalk? Probably not.
Yeah.
But I think those are some of our guiding lights. Then it can serve as some of our guardrails too.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about sidewalks then. The Highway City Community Development put the number of roughly 30 miles of streets without sidewalks in the West area. At a candidate forum recently, you talked about a dedicated city fund matched by county to stop the finger pointing, to use a very sophisticated term. So walk us through the mechanics of how you think that funding should be allocated and a timeline, maybe rough in your vision of how we can accomplish this.
So
maybe go background. Yeah. To give us a perspective on the sidewalk issue.
To directly speak on the problem, west of 99 is a patchwork of what is city-owned and county-owned. And to be honest, some of that exists within the city itself, because I was talking to some gentlemen at Cafe Venice this morning, and they were talking about the bike lanes, and as soon as you get to Dakota...
They stop.
They stop.
Yeah, you see the sheriff, but you don't see bike lanes.
So there you go. So it's not only an issue there. I think in terms of... So what ends up being the struggle west of 99 is when you talk to your city officials, the city officials will say it's the county. When you talk to county officials, they'll say it's the city.
Yeah.
And any which way you, 30 years later, you still don't have sidewalks.
Yeah.
What I'm suggesting is, can we form a different level of partnership and relationship with, and we have a new opportunity with the Safer Roads, Better Streets? No.
Yeah, but the name's always changing. Whatever that alternative.
The alternative to Measure C is. We have an opportunity, especially around schools, to get some of this right. Can the city pony up? Hey, we're talking about SATA, and I'm sure that'll be a topic later, that we can have these billions of dollars elsewhere. Then what is it for millions of dollars to fix what are potentially small areas of county islands that are like peninsular, with, like surrounded by city, where
ask it now. I was going to ask about how aggressive you think annexation should be.
I don't think annexation should be overly excessive, but I think where it's become peninsular, where the whole area is surrounded except this tiny strip,
yeah.
I think then you have to have
so isolated pockets.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Because it's just...
Are we talking a block or multiple blocks? How big is a pocket to be a pocket?
I think these are like legal questions, and these are probably policy questions too. At what point, some of it's going to be cost benefit analysis in terms of like, at what point do you cross a financial threshold where you're going to get yourself into much deeper waters. But I think where, for instance, on Clinton in 99, where it's almost literally just a street, and we have children traversing every day to get to Tilley Elementary, and that Valentine, over by Clinton, when it rains, Jordan, it's a total mud pit, and our kids are traversing through that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about the West Area Neighborhood Specific Plan, which passed unanimously last October. So... It's always a funding question. Can you talk about the funding element of that and how you envision what you would ask for in year one?
I think it'd be, so the West Neighborhood Specific Plan has, there have been conversations with community and goals about what are the tier one needs, where are tier two, tier three.
Yeah.
It's just funding exactly with those tier ones, because nobody's asking for 30 miles of sidewalk tomorrow.
Yeah.
What they are saying is that in these particular corridors that are key to get to a bus stop or to get to a school, or these areas have been more higher accident prone, can we do those first?
Yeah.
And ultimately, it's a question of what our funding priorities are. Yeah. That area has been very similar in that way for the last 30 years.
I mean, I'm sure city's going to guide it. These are dangerous intersections where we need additional infrastructure. I'm sure that's usually where we start, right?
So safety is how it should be. Usually it's where liability.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, the inverse of that. Yeah,
but yes, it should be around safety first.
So if the west side of Fresno, it almost feels like a different city when you're in there, because it can feel rural at points. It can feel like track homes. It can feel like a whole bunch of different things. Where do you see it going in the next 5 years in terms of development? And then I guess as a contrast, where would you like it to go?
In Central Unified, if I contrast a little bit with Fresno Unified and most other school districts that are experiencing a declining enrollment, we have just flatlined. So we're not increasing, nor are we declining. Obviously, it's going to be based on what is the housing stock and what are the opportunities there. I think, and for us, there's so many patches for you to do infill development, whether that be duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes, whether that talks about even those little block parks that where the city can use that land for actually something that has a communal value as well. I would like to see where I see it going is if we did nothing, as it's been the case for the last 20, 30 years, where I see it going is if the city actually began following its own, the specific plan that the community inputted, we could have some radical transformative things there that continue to make that a place where families want to call home, that there are affordable opportunities and market rate opportunities. And I think those are the things that we want to see throughout the city.
Okay, let's move to Tower. There's, in many neighborhoods, there's tensions around things like noise, sound, nightlife, culture. And there's contingents in Tower. I think people paint with a broad brush in Tower. They think it's all 20-somethings that are in punk bands. But no, it's a complex community. And there's some people that want to lean towards that kind of more quieter, they're beautiful bungalows and their quiet streets. And then there's some people who just want to party and they want to turn it into a wild bar district, which in some ways we need that too. So how do you adjudicate kind of those various perspectives on what Tower should be? Like if you were at a community forum and you've got two contingents representing these two factions, how would you think about middle ground and compromise with them?
Strangely enough, at least when I've talked to folks so far, Jordan, it hasn't really been the binary. When I make this one proposal, which is, it's always around parking.
Okay. And we're having parking's the biggest issue.
Big conversations about parking in downtown. I've never seen us have a conversation about parking in Tower when so many for the homeowners and for even for the renters that live in the community, that's their biggest complaint is parking. And really when people may get a little bit inebriated and going back to their cars,
yeah.
How kind and compassionate are they to the neighborhoods around?
Yeah, don't be on people's lawns. Just don't
please,
do it.
Please. And the biggest thing that I'm just hearing is like, could we even have, we're talking about all these parking garages downtown, but we actually have a need today in Tower. It doesn't have to be something massive. We want it to fit the community. Maybe there's—
stick it right behind Tower Theater.
Exactly.
Just build
that's city owned. Maybe we go down, maybe, or we keep it at below a certain height.
Yeah.
But man, that would still allow for the nightlife that we love in Tower. It still allows for the community engagement. Maybe it even increases safety because you're not walking in unlit streets. And you're not impeding and harming the homeowners that live and want a little bit of quiet too.
Let's talk about Porch Fest. It's one of the neighborhood's big events of the year. And sometimes events grow and grow, and then the city wants to get involved. A famous situation is Art Hop.
Art Hop.
Miguel Arias' famous press conference, shooting off his hip. And I have talked to organizers of Porch Fest. Things run pretty smoothly now, but mm-hmm. We do have rogue porches and things that go on, and there can be elements of chaos. How do you think about when you should get involved in helping make sure large events are safe? Or do you take more of a hands-off approach and say, you come to me when you have issues and then we help?
So there's the city I dream of and the city that is.
Yeah.
So the city that is, when I talk to organizers, they're like, please just leave us alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
The city I dream of is the city that could be a partner.
Yeah.
To say, because so many of the organizers know which are the rogue porches, they actually know which are the streets that actually need closing for safety.
Yeah.
I just imagine, what if the city was actually a partner, not a leader?
Yeah.
We don't, the residents lead, the community leads, but we can amplify, we can support, we can strengthen.
Do you think that's trust or communication channels, or where's that gap between what you would dream of and what is?
Overwhelmingly today, trust.
Trust.
Residents, community organizers do not trust the city. They believe that anything good will be taken down, you know, with a quickness at the drop of a hat and just on one unfortunate event. So many people remember fondly the movie screenings on the back of Tower Theater. Then we had some unfortunate incidences, but then the whole community suffers because that's taken away from all.
Yeah. So when there are incidents, how would you think about approaching that? Let's say you're elected to city council. Next year, there's an incident at Porch Fest. There might be more public safety factions at City Hall. They might, let's just shut this down. It's out of control. Like, how would you think about addressing an incident after it happens?
I think one has to understand that we have incidents every day.
Yeah.
We don't set the city down because somebody gets injured on a street. Like, we have incidents every day. So I think we have to understand the context. Were there other things that we could have done to mitigate this? Is this a one-off? If there's a systemic issue, then that maybe have to have a different conversation. But that's not usually what I hear are the major issues.
Okay. Something that Annalisa Preya, the current city council person representing District 1, has focused her attention on over time and more recently specifically is vacant buildings. What would be your approach to figuring out ways to incentivize building owners that maybe are enjoying taking a loss on their taxes, don't want to do the renovations, Is it some combination of carrot or stick? And then maybe talk about how you view how Perea has handled this particular issue.
I think Annalisa has been a leader, at least within Fresno, to talk about this issue, to bring it up. I think Tower is a great place for us to start, but I think the carrots and sticks have to be applied much wider, because I think when we see blight in certain communities, oftentimes it leads from abandoned buildings or owners just not really wanting to do anything with the properties.
And I know that's a big issue downtown, a huge issue.
Huge. And to be honest, in our strip malls and so many of our other communities, up and down Fresno. So this is a really important one for me, because when I talk to business owners and young entrepreneurs, even older entrepreneurs, they're looking for places. There is still a huge desire for brick and mortar. But when we are pricing them out, sizing them out, because we only have these places for big box stores or these huge stores, but oftentimes when you're making that first leap from maybe a truck to a restaurant or whatever the case, from your coffee cart to a new coffee shop, you are not ready to take over a 2,000 square foot space, because the rent is, you're not going to be able to generate that. Maybe you want to grow into that in the future.
Yeah.
And those kind of, just as we talk about, we're missing the missing middle in terms of housing to give people options in terms of how they're able to grow. I think that's something we have to be talking about in terms of commercial. And in terms of vacant buildings, we absolutely need carrots, but we need sticks too.
Yeah. And related to that, what's your view on adaptive use and historic preservation? I know that can sometimes be an obstacle, protecting old buildings, the rules that we have. Would you encourage, if you were advising the Historical Preservation Commission, would you encourage them to be more flexible? Or do you think we need a different system or a way of thinking about it, a framing? Do we need to work harder to preserve these historic buildings? Where are you at in that spectrum?
I think it's really, when we're talking about preserving the buildings, we're really talking about the bones and largely the outside and the facades and the feel.
Yeah.
But I think we are in a financial crunch, especially with the interest rates where they are and other costs where they are. How do we actually allow more flexible usage of inside? Because that's what people are constantly looking for. They want to make it work for their barber shop. They want to make it work for their restaurant. Yes, in terms of for a restaurant, for instance, there might be specific structural things that you're going to need in terms of for the cooking spaces and for your stoves and whatnot. But I think when we're talking about the historical structure, we're really just talking about the outside. And as much as we can preserve that, I think that there's a beauty in that. But I think in terms of, I take a strong towns approach, meaning more incremental.
Yeah.
Let's build more of what is working. Let's build less of what is not. And if we're going to let's avoid huge leaps that are not fiscally responsible, that just because we saw a cool thing somewhere else.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're going to jump into my favorite section, which is called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you.
And are we starting with me and Ed's or whatever the case may be? Let's do it.
Okay. First one, yard signs.
I think they are overrated if you're talking about whether it creates any kind of persuasion.
Yeah.
I think, strangely enough, a lot of people ask me for them. So I think if they just the look of it, they underrated just for just
it's signaling, right? Mm-hmm. I'm part of this crew or this tribe or whatever. I don't know the efficacy in terms of influencing other people, but if you just want to say who you support, I think it's fine.
And I think people are also looking at ways to form new forms of community. Strangely enough, so many people have asked me for their signs. They said it just starts a conversation with my neighbors.
There you go.
Whether we agree or disagree, it just starts a conversation.
Absolutely. Next one, me and Ed's.
For me, overrated, although our Jakarta office is right next to Aminet, so big shout out to them because they always come through clutch. But if I'm by myself, we don't have great pizza in the city, apologies, Mali, but I do oftentimes default to Chicago pizza with a twist or curry pizza.
Okay, next one. What's your order at the Alchemist?
My order at the Alchemist and Hamza knows that I'm there frequently. Shout out to Iseni and the whole crew as well. Would definitely be a cold brew probably on most days, but if I'm there early enough, probably a cortado.
Oh, yeah. I'm about the same. The 180 freeway.
Overrated or underrated?
We did it. Would you go, if you went back in time, would you not do it or would you do it?
If I went back in time?
Yeah. You were the urban planner back then. Would you cut a hole in the city, put that there? Or
no, because I know context matters and the number of Black and Latino neighborhoods that were actually shot. That went in between and destroyed, I would have a very hard time doing that.
Okay. Next one, the Tower Theater.
Underrated.
As a venue space, do you think it's a high-quality venue space?
It's gorgeous. I had an opportunity to screen a film with The Big Tell. Where else would you want to show it in Fresno?
Something I know you're doing, door knocking.
Underrated.
Okay. What do you learn from door knocking?
So much. You learn about... For those that want to have a conversation, it's not everybody. The generosity of folks in this community, the hardships that a lot of folks in this community face. I was in the Quigley Park neighborhood. Man, the number of people sharing with me, I'm on a fixed income of $1,200. This apartment is $1,375.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. People have let me in. People have gave me water. They've fed me. But the chance of having and the opportunity to have those conversations, that's actually what makes running for city council special, because it's something really humbling and endearing to be able to do that. Some of my friends have done well. They've ended up in Copper River, but they'll share with you. I said, oh, I was talking to one of my good friends about his son. And I was like, oh, so does he play outside? He's, oh my gosh, nobody plays outside. And I said, your neighborhood, everybody plays outside. We have the woman selling tamale on the weekend next door around the corner. We have the Hmong family selling strawberries. That safety's not an issue. And he's like, I hate to phrase it this way. He's like, yeah, we just assume everybody's a pedophile. And I was like, man, what a way to live. And you're the most affluent, gated, cameras every single corner. And that does not feel like living. That does not feel like community. That's not the history of humankind to live in that level of isolation.
No. Next one, public comment at city council meetings.
I think they are, it's hard to say underrated or overrated. I think if
I do. Are they useful?
They're important.
Okay.
I think the community always has to have a place to share, to give feedback, to alert you about things that you haven't thought about, to give you consideration and hopefully give you a lot of pause. I think far too often, I don't think that always occurs. But I was at a meeting at Fresno Unified School District last night, and it was about SEDA. I honestly didn't think I'd go speak. I actually didn't want to speak because I'm not a resident of Fresno Unified. But I just heard so many comments, I felt compelled, and the outcome was a little bit different than many of us expected.
Yeah. Do you prefer debates or forums?
We've never had a debate. So
in theory, which would you prefer? Do you want, because debates, they can really draw stark contrast, and forums, it's more about giving ideas room to breathe, but less about that kind of clash.
I think you need both. I think it is so difficult for the Fresno resident to be able to discern and differentiate, because go to any candidate's website and they're fighting for Fresno, fighting for infrastructure, more public safety.
Yeah.
What any of that means. I'll be honest, this has been the great fortune, and teasingly and all with love, misfortune, is I am working so much with youth. So they're like, we're not putting up with that.
Yeah.
We looked at Zoran Mamdani's race. He had very concrete things. What are your concrete things? If you go onto the website, you will find very concrete things.
Okay, a few more. Murals as a way to create a civic spirit.
Extremely important.
Okay.
I think
they're underrated. I agree. I think we need more art everywhere.
Absolutely. I think that is the point. That was the point of Measure P, where the community said, we are willing to tax ourselves because we want better parks and we want more art.
Yeah.
I think, yes, there's a conversation to be had about the embezzlement that happened.
There's a whole lot of conversation, but yes, but for another time.
But I also think, for instance, using Measure P money for graffiti abatement on the 180, on the 99, and the 41 was never how the community wanted to use it.
And that's
what City Hall and the mayor have been doing.
Yeah. Just a couple more. What is the best kind of doll?
Doll?
Yeah. D-A-L.
Sorry, D-A-O.
D-A-L.
D-A-L.
Doll.
Oh, doll.
Yeah, doll. Sorry.
No. My bad. I was so confused.
No, we jumped from one subject to a completely different subject. Yeah, I prefer the type that uses lentils. I know some people like the mung beans.
Yes.
Like,
okay.
Where are you at?
Man, you confused me, Jordan. I thought D-O-L-L, and I was like, I have
doll. Yeah, the food.
Yeah, maybe food also. But specifically on food, honestly, the Yellow dal you'll get at the gurdwara every Sunday. My mom makes a great, she actually has a kind of a dry dal that is very good as opposed to the more wet dals that you're likely to have.
So what is a dry dal? What's the texture of that like?
It's the lentils. They actually continue to allow them to boil and soak up all the different curries and masalas to the point where it's actually dry by the end.
Yeah. Ooh. All right. Last one. ADUs as a housing solution.
Underrated.
It's more ADUs, more buildings on a site.
I told you I listen to Strongtown, so we call them backyard cottages. We do
not
call them
ADU
is too formal. When I was talking to families around, so in the tower, you see a lot more ADU because you have so many young folks and that want to actually live that way. But when I go to the Quigley Park area, a lot of folks that have maybe paid off their houses but are on fixed incomes, they need a supplemental income. They want something that could be actually like safe. And for when we're talking about like a missing middle and for maybe a young person or maybe a newer immigrant family that's just looking to get themselves settled, I think that's a great option. I think the YIMBY-ish part of me, although not all aspects, is more options and ADUs and rather backyard cottages are an important part of that.
Okay, let's jump back into city-related questions. You brought up Central Unified before. I know that Central Unified, like many school districts, had a dip because of the pandemic and it's returned to levels, as you said. Fresno Unified is still down significantly. What do you think is the cause of that? Are we talking about housing supply? Are we talking about demographics? Are we talking about school quality? I know there's a lot of different theories that explain what's going on with Fresno Unified. What's your interpretation with your background as a school board trustee?
I think in Central Unified, we do not yet have any charter schools or anything of that. There are no off-ramps. At this point, you go to the public school. I'm a product of public mm-hmm. schools. I think it's extremely important to have those particular opportunities. What we did in Central Unified, and there were parents, I'll be honest, on the north side that were upset with us, but probably one of the most bravest things that particular board did was we actually created school attendance boundaries looking not at racial demographics. We looked at class income. How do we actually decrease what in Education East is called unduplicated count, but really is referring to income? And a big important part is how do we actually have people of different income groups actually go together too?
Yeah.
And where the district wanted to cut itself in a north and south access, we said, no, we'd rather have it in an east and west. It doesn't alleviate all issues, but I want north side parents to forever come and hold school districts accountable to make sure that their schools are resources. And I want south side kids to absolutely benefit from those resources going to the districts always.
Yeah, fragmentation has caused a lot of issues. We could go on this. I hope you've all probably listened to that Nice White Parents podcast. It was based in Brooklyn, but I'm curious how your trustee experience changed the way you think about land use issues, which is something that you'll be deeply involved in at the city. How did that experience change your perspective in any way about thinking about capacity and finances?
I think the conversation around from the trustee experience, I think a little bit more was I did serve on the West Neighborhood Specific Plan.
Yeah.
I was fairly green at that time. Councilmember Oliver Baines appointed me since I lived in the area. And then I really got to see who makes the decisions, who do city planners listen to, who do they not listen to, which ideas just exist in the ether versus which ones get written down and brought to the next meeting as this is how we're going forward really quickly. Because I've never been a developer, I don't know if I initially understood the difference of zeros that accrues to your land value, depending on how it is zoned. So I think that experience put a seed for me. Then it's just been reading. And then of course, just talking to neighborhoods, seeing what we don't have in Central Unified west of 99, specifically around grocery stores. I'll be honest, these are the same conversations I'm hearing here in the tower in the Fresno High area as well.
For sure.
I think the movement of Trader Joe's north from the older location on Barstow and Blackstone, that had a huge impact on the local community, even here in Tower and Fresno High.
We're going to jump into kind of citywide questions now. We've talked a lot about District 1 related issues. So Fresno has a strong mayor system, which means the mayor has a lot of leverage and power to enact policies that he envisions. And the city council often is in a somewhat weaker structural position, although you have to work together. What's your diagnosis right now of how well city council is working vis-a-vis the mayor and his system What do you, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think the city council is working well right now?
I think government works best when there are checks and balances. At present, it does not feel that the city council is any check on the vision of the mayor.
Yeah.
And that has led to, I have
education programs, right?
Sure.
Sure. Yeah. I got educated on SEDA. Now I know some things.
Exactly. And I think this record level of deficits that the mayor has been spending like a drunken sailor.
Yeah.
And there's been no check and balance. No household, no business, and very few other government entities. A school district could never operate like that.
Yeah.
I just, the thought to use one-time COVID money for reoccurring costs and just stick it in the general fund is outrageous.
Yeah, short-term thinking. And we've seen so many businesses go out because of that. That's ultimately what killed Bitwise in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
They just ran with the free money and just kept hiring people and buying things. Let's talk about SEDA now. Dyer says he opposes sprawl and leapfrog development, but supports SEDA. I don't even know what the hell that means. So for you, what does smart growth look like?
Smart growth looks like in areas that we already have that are already connected to existing city infrastructure. How are we filling that out, creating more density, going upward if we need to? And we already have an area of expansion in the West area that already has the infrastructure built out. So if you're going to do some of that, you already have an area to do that. Why are we doing something that's not even contiguous with the city boundaries?
Yeah. Tani Bergstrom and I would go rounds on this question because I should play devil's advocate. I push her and say, but it's so hard to get infill housing built. So we need to do something, right? And obviously we don't want to tell the city, hey, we're going to raise your taxes and build out forever, which is what SEDA is. But at the same time, if we can't get infill housing built, we're kind of trapped. So what do you see as the solution? Because it's really hard. There's not a lot of developers that want to do infill. If you want to listen to this, there's a great episode that we did on Fresnolandia before that show concluded, where we took Reza Assimi, who's a local developer, and we took him to Bakersfield to meet some other infill developers. It was a fascinating conversation, but essentially what it came down to is you have to be a unicorn to really do it, and you have to be able to find financing, and those things are really hard. So for you, what's your vision then if no SEDA?
So I listened to that episode, and I think I just want to kind of contrast. They were specifically talking about downtown development.
Downtown development, right. For sure, and Stipmer.
I think in terms of infill, I think we need a strong town sort of approach where we are developing potentially local, smaller residential developers, that it's not going to only be the grand wizards that have long ruled Fresno. It is, Jordan, when you have an abandoned house that nothing happens, is there an opportunity for someone here residential to make investments in because it might save his own neighborhood or her own neighborhood.
Old hotels, all those kinds of
things. But to create an opportunity. And one major thing is we have, in Fresno, we still lag behind the state. We have decreased some of the permitting prohibitions, but then what we do is we make one grand step and then we water it down really quickly.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll do that office to residential by ministerial approval, but then we'll quickly water it down and say the city council member has to actually know about this first so that they can throw dirt in the cogs.
And
they
then
want
they,
to be able
no,
to do that.
There's no blood on anyone's hands because you can just say, oh, it was too complicated or whatever.
And I think that level of excuses over and over again. Everything is possible. Anything is possible. Yes, there are certain external things, especially around financing. Financing is a major component right now. Supply costs, labor costs, all these things have to obviously come together. But even in a particular period where one may be a little bit out of whack, you can prime it to be ready to go.
If you had to pick one single utility affordability fight for Fresno, what would you focus on?
I think this is going to be the fight. I think I'm literally running I'm running on capping the utility rates from these kind of hikes. Trash has already gone up 80% in the last 5 years. Yeah. Even more if you had those 96-gallon, the smaller trash cans. In a period where we're already feeling stretched to the bone in terms of just skyrocketing prices on our gas and rent, everything around us, the city has to be able to do certain things within its control. The reality is the city has already charged higher than needed in certain utilities. That's the part they don't tell you. They're actually borrowing from some of the city utilities to pay for the other ones. And in terms of the SATA hike, CRMs, we're not going to get a SATA fee.
Yeah.
What we're going to get is all of a sudden our water or our utility rates are going to continue to go up. Mayor Dyer, when he just presented the budget, already signaled that it's not going to be as bad as Clovis, which went up 60%.
Yeah.
But we're going to basically be raising your rates.
Yeah.
And I think without public input, where we're only essentially only giving the public through Prop 218, 45 days really just to give a comment, it's not enough. And it's when you are door knocking in the neighborhoods and talking community, people are stretched way too thin.
Now, some area where you do want to expand city services in a considerable way is around mental health services, and how the county operates things can drive a lot of us bonkers. But why should the city get involved?
Because most cities of this size at some point take responsibility for their own services.
Yeah.
The reality is...
Is there a similar city to us in terms of size that you would use as a comparison, or are you just kind of speaking generally about once you get to a certain threshold?
I think once you get to a certain threshold, I think of Oakland has, for instance, their own city public health services, and many other cities do. I think it makes permitting easier, for instance, when you're creating a restaurant, that the health is actually services also within the city. But also in
So speed is the primary function? You'll get faster access to services? Or
so that's part of it. So via the Jacara movement, I was part of various coalitions that worked specifically with the County of Fresno Public Health during the COVID crisis. I think there are fantastic people at Fresno County Public Health that have the expertise, the goodwill, and the desire to do what is best as per their profession guides them.
Yeah.
And then there's a political situation that doesn't care about any of those things.
Yeah.
And that's just the reality of, and unfortunately, it's the foreseeable reality.
Yeah. I wish Gary Bredefeld would do things that he promised in his campaign. And if he wants to focus on library art stands and display boards, like,
and bookmarks,
and that's his prerogative, I guess, but that's not what he said he was going to do. So maybe he's either figured out it's way harder to accomplish than he was communicating. But yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Some people love the culture wars.
Yeah, they do, because it's a way to avoid doing hard things.
Indeed.
So when I asked people, when I told people I was going to interview you, and I said, what kind of things would you like me to ask him? Multiple people said police budget. And that came up, you know, in many different ways. And I've actually asked people on city council about this. I've asked other candidates for city council. And I think what's hard about it is that it is so massive that it can be hard to dissect what is important and what is not. And there is a mantra, kind of like the defense budget in the United States, where it's just like more is always better. And so I know that there was some, Dyer's new budget, there was some kind of, I don't know, he made some maybe small cuts, quote unquote, whatever that means. He added a new something. It's so obfuscatingly confusing to me. Like, I can barely understand what's going on. So
sure.
How would you think about, you're sitting on city council, Dyer brings a new budget. It's calling for expansions in various FPD services, operations, whatever. What kind of questions, or how would you think about looking at that to determine whether it was something the city should do?
I think overall, we have to keep our finances in order at the current rate. We are putting ourselves in a structural harm like the city of Stockton was right before it went bankrupt. So that is just a financial reality. I'm not into slogans of defund the police. That's just slogans. I think there are key areas where the city, our police department, has tremendous power in terms of its investigative abilities, its abilities. Homicide rates have come down throughout the country, but they have dramatically come down in Fresno. And I think there is credit to be given, absolute credit, all credit to be given to the police department. But I think in terms of the wait times, in terms of fielding calls, and Mayor Dyer, as police chief, long knew that we do not have the structure in place to be able to field the number of calls that we have. But we are going to have to look at other models about non-emergency calls, because property crime, like those kind of like vandalism, those things, they don't get looked at all.
Yeah.
And those are quality of life issues, because when a person feels like the police is ignoring what is clearly a burning issue to them, because they are set up and structured to help a different type of issue and different type of problem. Mm-hmm.
They'll seek out other solutions too, which are not the kinds we like. I remember I had that experience of being on hold when I called 911. I was actually, this is hilarious, but I was sideswiped by a police officer who then drove off.
Oh, jeez.
And so I called 911 on the police officer that sideswiped. He was right in front of Catholic Charities going down towards downtown. And yeah, I think I called three times before I got someone when I called 911, which I know happens to a lot of people. Mine was less serious. I just got thrown off my bike into the street or whatever, which could have been bad. Who knows?
It could have absolutely been bad.
Yeah. But it definitely, going back to the trust thing, it makes you not trust the city if you're in need and you can't get help.
So I think we're going to be looking at how do we reallocate resources also within the police to make sure that to build community trust, they have to be able to talk to someone. They have to feel like their need was heard and that there's going to be some response to it. And like I said, in the most worst crimes, our police department is fantastic.
Yeah,
I think it's these quality of life day-to-day things.
Yeah, which is where most people encounter. Those things, the violent crimes, the whatever, those are exceptional. They're horrific, but exceptional. It's the day-to-day. Okay, to kind of conclude, we've had someone on city council representing D1 that's lived in Fresno High, which is a very specific navel-gazing neighborhood of a bunch of self-obsessed people. I'm one of them. And if we had a council representative that's from the west side, how do you think that would change how D1 operates?
I don't think in a major way. I think for west of 99, I think they would just actually...
They would feel more represented.
But the reality is, when you ask me the question of what I get at Alchemist, the reason I could rattle it off because I spend so much time there. And at the end of the day, I don't want to pretend that I'm the expert of the Lions Skate Park community or the Quigley Park community or Fresno High and Tower.
Yeah.
Or even west of 99, I'm just a six there. What I am is I'm a person that is patient. I'm willing to listen. I'm humble enough to know I don't know everything. And good governance happens when you're willing to just hear people where they're at, hear what their concerns are. And a big part is when you haven't taken money from other interests. That allows you to make hard choices. I'm not seeking to be a career politician. I tell everybody I'm not running for a position.
You're not already planning your next position? What is that?
Honestly, Jordan, I love what I do in Central Unified. My gosh, it's amazing the work that we've done and the stuff that we're seeing. Jicara Movement has been one of the most fulfilling things that I've had an opportunity to get to meet. Manpreet Kaur came out of Jicara Movement.
Yeah.
I get to teach history at UC Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
I love what I do.
Yeah.
My life feels complete. It feels full. This is just an opportunity to serve. And I will happily come back to just be a resident again.
Yeah. So when you look at, there's a bunch of races going on right now in the city. And I like to look at kind of the landscape of it and go like, what's the fight about? What are we really fighting about? Because cities are purple, right? You have people that are more similar than they're different in a lot of these races. Sure, maybe you have a community organizer running against a career politician, but similar goals. And what would you say this particular campaign season, when you look across the landscape, what does it say about what are we wrestling with as Fresno through this particular election season?
I think we have seen a co-option where I think there was people believed that the strongest divide was between red versus blue, but they saw that green takes overall. So people say that directly. People thought it was like Democrats versus Republicans at one time, but maybe it was at one time in the city. But now, money, and it's oftentimes the same money, it's the same political people that actually serve all of these interests.
Yeah.
And so I think the question in this particular moment is insider versus outsider. But I say that with a caveat, because my friends asked me, how do we know you're not going to turn into an insider? And I said, you know what's scary? You don't.
Yeah.
All I can share is the time I want to hang out more with those folks than the folks that I love serving and being in neighborhood and community. That's when y'all know.
Yeah.
But it's really about insider versus outsider. But how do we actually, and funding is one mechanism, but how do we keep the outsiders to always be somewhat outsiders?
Yeah. What's that old phrase like, you don't know whether a decision is good or bad until you make it sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of the day, I think the people that have high integrity and are not just viewing this as a ladder to climb up to Sacramento or DC or whatever, those are the people that I feel like I trust more. Now, there's a question about effectiveness and whatever else, but I think at the end of the day, I want to vote with whose values I agree with. I think that's where I come from. And maybe it's not true for everybody. That's my perspective.
But I think that's actually what's on the ballot, is questions of values and questions of integrity. I have been having a lot of conversation around corruption. And while people don't always know the specifics of this contract or that contract or how the city could be for the last 5 years operating with Brown Act violations.
And just read about Facebook ads conducted by city councilmen to run for county supervisors. Bonkers.
And then have the audacity, when we're caught being in a Brown Act violation, to call it a win because we weren't fined. And I think, well, people don't know the specifics. They know something's wrong. They know City Hall doesn't work for them. The Fresno Bee gave a question, and during their endorsement process, they said, what can we do to give Fresno a better reputation? Most of the other folks focused on PR strategies. For me, I said, Fresno City Hall deserves the bad reputation because it has earned it. Whether we're talking about Porch Fest or Art Hop, whether we're talking about community, they do not see City Hall as a partner. They usually see it as a hindrance, or if at best, just someone stay out of our way.
Yeah.
I don't think it has to be like that. I dream of something better than that.
Yeah. We conclude these podcasts each time with book recommendations. What are a few books you like to recommend to listeners?
I read too much, so I don't know what I'd recommend. I'd have to think about that. I'll tell you what I'm reading right now.
Yeah. Just tell us what's on your nightstand, if you will.
Yeah. So probably three books that I'm reading right now. One is Anand Gopal's Days of Rage and Love, or Love and Rage. If you read his first book, No Good Men Among the Living, oh my gosh, it was about that he spent time in Afghan villages to understand the Taliban not as just a entity, but to actually understand as a lived reality. He does the same thing in Syria. I just finished Catherine Blunt's California Burning about PG&E.
Oh, yeah. I did a podcast with her.
It was your podcast that got me to read the book. Yeah. And then I'm finishing up M. Nolan Gray's Arbitrary Lines, which is absolutely about zoning.
Ooh, I need to pick that up. I need a deep dive in that for sure. Deep, what's on the campaign calendar for the next couple of weeks? I know there's a forum down the street from us at Big Red. Is there anything else you'd like to mention going on?
Yeah. So this weekend, we're going to be painting cars and doing an ice cream social at Inspiration Park. Okay. So if you want to join us on Saturday or Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on May 18th, on Monday is the last scheduled forum. That'll be at the Big Red Church at 6 p.m. for District 1, 7:30 p.m. for District 7. And we're going to do some of these paint your cars and ice cream socials at Trolley Park and Quigley and Lions Park as well. Look at Deep4Fresno on Instagram. And more importantly, shoot me a text and I'm willing to do that. 559-647-4700. You can call me, but if you shoot me a text first, I'll know who it is. 559-647-4700.
Awesome. Deep, thank you so much for talking with me.
Appreciate you. Fresno's
best. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.